welcome to episode number one of the Back in My Play podcast. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and I'm very happy to be joined by the same panelists as we had last time for the Zelda episode. First off, returning is Trey Gibson. Trey, how you doing?
Doing fine. How about you?
Good. Comcast is treating you well. We want to give the audience a heads up that the local Comcast for Trey is fixing some things down the street, so if we do lose him, that would be why.
Yeah. Comcast.
And we also have Josh Hillier, which I think I got your name correctly this week.
Dude, you knocked it out of the park. That sounded beautiful.
Thanks. That's all I've been doing today is I've been kind of like, oh, man, Josh Hillier.
Looking at yourself in the mirror, saying it.
You can do it, Kev. All right. Yeah, basically that was my goal for this week, was to get that right. But Josh, obviously, thank you so much for spending the time and talking about some retro games.
It's a pleasure. I'm sitting outside to do it. That's how badly I want to do it.
And I wanted to reiterate for everyone out there that this is a podcast based on nostalgia. So I want you to take a step into whatever time machine or portal that you want to get into. Today, we're going to be going back into 1989 and 1990 to take a look at DuckTales. And when you get ready to take out that game pack, that fresh game pack from that purple Capcom box and load it into your NES, I want you to also consider this. It is Father's Day today, and Trey and Josh are both fathers. So first off, happy Father's Day to you guys.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And I think it's interesting that we're going to get into DuckTales today, because in a way, Uncle Scrooge McDuck was somewhat of a surrogate father to these young ducklings. And it's also a shout out and a reminder that, you know, also there's many great stepfathers, and like I have a stepfather who is absolutely fantastic, and many other surrogate fathers out there that do such a great job and aren't as big of an asshole as Scrooge McDuck. So keep that in mind when you say happy Father's Day to everyone out there. But as we get again into that time machine, we're going to kind of go back into the history of DuckTales. And to give everyone out there a little bit of background before we talk about the game itself, is, like I mentioned before, came out in September of 1989 in the United States, and it was one of those weird games that came out later in Japan. It came out in January of 1990. For people that are fans of the Mega Man series, you might have noticed some similarities between the games, with some key personnel coming from that Mega Man series and going to work on DuckTales, including for producer, it was Takuro Fujiwara. And as much as I'm learning Japanese right now, my name pronunciation is not great, but one of the key figures was Kenji Inafune and Yoshihiro Sakaguchi on the music, which is one of those things that is best remembered about the DuckTales game, is the fantastic music. But you can also see some of that great level design and character design through those members as well. So we have to thank them for taking some time off of. So 89, I'm guessing that was right after Mega Man 2 or right before Mega Man 2, about that same time where they were working on, hell, it was Mega Man 2 the game that they were working on alongside of DuckTales?
It's entirely possible when you look at the timeline. I think that was sort of a time, though, where they had smaller teams working on games. Mm-hmm. So, it's possible that they were working on three or more games at one time.
It's cool nonetheless, and it was the kind of the start of the whole Capcom and Disney relationship that got us other great games like Chippendale's Rescue Rangers, and arguably, at least a different version of Aladdin between Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis, some good Mickey Mouse games, and
Goof Troop.
Yeah, that's a good call. That is an underrated
like that
game.
Yeah, I really like
Zelda S, perhaps.
Oh, for sure. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. But I think this is a really interesting time to go back to again. Obviously, we did an NES game for episode zero, but with this time period, there was so many great things going on. And to really, again, give people a little bit of background, this is when music started to really matter in games. And it's one of those things where you look at the level design of DuckTales, where they all have, you know, individual pieces of music, unlike, you know, some games like Super Mario Brothers that would just have two or three pieces. Each level kind of had its own feel. And that's what I wanted to, the last thing I wanted to mention before we talk about our history with the game is that the great thing about the DuckTales games were the amazing level design and the ability, like Mega Man, again, the similarities between the two, being able to select any level that you want to go to at the start of the game. You didn't have just such a linear experience. You could say, hey, I want to go to the moon because it's got great music, or I want to go to the Amazon, or I want to go to the African mines. Like, you had that choice to pick between the two, and that's why we wanted to showcase it this week, aside from us just having such great memories of the game. So with all that stuff out of the way, we're going to take a super quick break because we have a lot of great music to put into this episode. And we're going to be right back talking about our history with the game. So stick around. Okay, so again, now we're back in 1990 and we are sitting down and playing DuckTales. Josh, I mean, going back to such a great game, I mean, what memories do you have of DuckTales? I mean, did you even, were you familiar with the show before playing the game, or was it vice versa? How did that work?
This was a case of the game turning me on to the show. And, you know, it's just a case of walking into a rental store and seeing DuckTales and the parents being okay with me renting it because it looks kid-friendly, you know? That Disney logo and everything. And so I was allowed to rent that, which is sort of funny to think about not being allowed to rent certain games on the NES, you know, where violence wasn't really that bad at the time. But yeah, I took it home, and like within seconds of hearing that introductory music at the difficulty select screen, I was in love, you know, just completely in love, and wanted to find out as much as I could about it. But, you know, here's the other interesting thing is that during this time, you couldn't just, you know, quickly go to Wikipedia and look up everything there is to know about an intellectual property. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you like DuckTales, but it's entirely possible to not even know that's a TV show unless one of your friends tells you. So
yeah, you might not have the Disney Channel or something like that.
And you know, that's right. That's when Disney was not on everyone's cable subscription. And so we did not have the Disney Channel for whatever reason. And so I had to watch it at friends' houses.
Trey, how about for yourself, your history with the game, your first time picking it up? What were your, you know, initial impressions or memories?
Well, it started the opposite of Josh with me. I watched the show first. But yeah, that was back when Disney, you had to have a subscription to have them. And my parents would never get me a Disney subscription, but I came down to stay with my grandma for a week. I think they went out of town, and my grandma was, you know, I was the first child, so she was, you know, spoiling the heck out of me. So she said, is there anything I can get for you? I said, yes, ma'am. I would like the Disney Channel, please. And she picked up the phone and called and got the Disney Channel installed.
Sweet.
So I got to turn that on and watch DuckTales. And by the end of the week, my parents got back, and I more or less had my grandma talk to them, and they ended up getting the Disney Channel, and I was hooked on DuckTales. That was my first show that I really got hooked on. I believe that was before Ninja Turtles. Yes, it was DuckTales.
Yes.
And I watched it religiously and found out there was a game coming out, and next thing you know, I've got the game and I'm playing it, and I was just amazed. It was a lot of fun. It was you know, I don't think I beat it until I was a little bit older, but I played the heck out of it. I was good at playing games, just not beating them. I had my own psychological ways of, you know, if I beat this certain stage, yeah, I beat the whole game. That's what I tell my friends. I only beat one level, but I beat the whole game. Don't judge me. So, you know.
Well, at least you had your grandmother advocating for you.
Right? She was on my side. She was on my side. She was all about the Disney Channel. And she didn't even ask me how much it cost. She said, what do you need? I said, the Disney Channel. She said, okay. The next thing I know, come in the room, and she's on the phone with the cable company saying, I need to get the Disney Channel. They told her the price, and she's like, oh, my goodness. She's like, nope, I still want it. I was like, yes.
Grandmothers are awesome.
Yeah, yes, they are. Yes, they are.
Man, so, but down the road, when we talk about my grandmother, my dad's mother, she hooked me up with so many video games. Like, she was – every Christmas was a video game, so I have to thank her for that. They were fantastic. But, you know, Trey, just like you, I thought I was poor growing up. Like, we were kind of poor. Like, we weren't living in a great area. But somehow we had the Disney Channel. I guess it was – both of my parents worked, so I guess it was something to keep us – busy. So I was hardcore DuckTales. Like, that power, they had like a power hour where they had the Mickey Mouse Club, they had some DuckTales, and I think later on they had some Tailspin, and that was like whatever, just throw me in front of the TV, I'll be good to go. Yep. And this was one of those games, just like The Legend of Zelda, I never owned this game until much later in life. It was one of those perennial rentals. Like, I rented the crap out of this game, and it was the same thing. I just looked at it. I'm like, I like DuckTales. I had known nothing about Capcom, but, you know, DuckTales looks cool, and it might have been even something that my parents went to the rental store and picked up themselves to bring home to me in the first place, just because, like you said, it was kind of family friendly, and it wasn't intimidating, and it said Disney on it, which is the stamp of approval for any young child. And it was everything from the music. And I just got such a kick. I would literally just play the game, not really get very far, but I just love to just go on the pogo stick, like the pogo cane. And I would just bounce all over the place. I wouldn't finish levels. I would just keep bouncing all over the place because, again, at this time period, for all of us, we were like 4, maybe even 5 years old if we picked it up a little bit after its release. And it is a pretty challenging game. But the everything from the music and just kind of like being able to run into all these different characters. And they did such a great job implementing the characters from the franchise. Like, all the kids, Huey, Dewey, and Louie were in it. Webley was in it, or whatever her name was, I forget, Webby, and Mrs. Beakley would drop like ice cream cones as health for you whenever you I think it was only in the African mines, but like Launchpad, you had Gizmo Duck, the Beagle Boys, and a bunch of the bosses were villains from the show, so it was like the ultimate. Like, you look at games that are made today that are based off of IP, like your some X-Men games, or, you know, there's so many games that just don't do a very good job being faithful and just being fun for people that are fans of the, you know, the source material, where this was, it nailed it. The characters looked spot on, the so many cool actions that you could do, not even the pogo stick, but when you figured out how to do like the golf club swing with the cane was just super satisfying. It was so cool.
Well, I just want to say, you know, what you're talking about with the mechanics and that you can figure out all those different actions. It's just really important to reiterate that this was made for a console with two buttons.
You know?
Like, some of these things would be mapped to like six different buttons today, but this was they managed to do this and make it feel really tight and control really well, to the point that you had fun just jumping around on the pogo stick, you know.
Yep.
And that was just one of the many things you can do, so I think that deserves great approval. What am I trying to say? Applause, perhaps.
Oh yeah. no for sure. Like, Trey, was there a specific level that you kind of spent the most time in? I know a lot of people say the moon, but that's not my favorite level.
Mm. The moon is my favorite level, and it's because of the music. I'm part of the bandwagon.
Josh, where are you at? What's your favorite level?
I don't have one that just jumps out right away, but I'd probably say Transylvania.
Yes!
When I think about it a little bit, yeah.
Hell yeah.
And for me, it's just a matter of, I always thought it was kind of funny how they had, you know, like ducks as mummies and stuff like that.
Yes.
It was appropriate enough, but still playing on this whole horror motif. It was kind of cool.
It was so cool. I mean, that level in general, I think part of it was being able to teleport with the mirrors and seeing like the old, the armored guys, like where you could like hit them and sometimes you get stuff that would pop out of their helmets and stuff like the suits of armor, and just something about that level really kind of stood out to me where I would, every single time I rented that game, I would go to that first, and I would always go to the moon first, but it might have also been because it was at the very bottom, and I thought it might have been the hardest or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But
and in some ways, it probably was.
Oh, we'll talk about this in the second segment,
sure,
but
sure.
it's kind of weird going back to it now. But the other thing, did you guys ever get a chance to experience this game through Nintendo Power and get to see some of the coverage that they did for it?
Sadly, no. What about you guys?
Trey, Nintendo Power, DuckTales. We might have lost, like I said, Trey, his Comcast.
Can you hear me?
Oh, we got you back, Trey.
Yeah, so I don't know what was going on with my mic. No, I did not have Nintendo Power at the time.
Oh, man. You guys missed out on some fantastic art.
Slacking.
Okay, first off, on for DuckTales, it was the cover of the September-October 89 issue. And first off, it was like a complete recreation of that first screen where you have that level select. And it was, in hindsight, like I have the cover pulled up right now and I'll post it in the show notes. In hindsight, it looks kind of weird because it is a Uncle Scrooge in what is a little bit more of a realistic looking kind of computer display and speakers, and it's like covered in weeds, and you can see one of the monkeys coming out of the screen, and one of those, oh man, those goddamn bumblebees that like there were so many parts throughout this game that just constantly stuck in my head, and even going back to it now, I'm like, yeah, man, I still hate those bumblebees. Those things suck. But if people did have Nintendo Power back then, like that was a cool cover because DuckTales got the front of it, even though there was previews for Batman and Super Mario Brothers 2, which Super Mario Brothers 2, there was a special guide in there, obviously, because that was on the cover of the very first issue of Nintendo Power. But
right,
if you can find a PDF, or if you look hard enough, you can find it through Google. Just look for it. Just look for the September-October 1989 issue of Nintendo Power and look through it. The art for DuckTales that's in the issue is fantastic, and you'll have some maps of the each level. It's like they give you strategies on how to find the treasures in the level, but again, that was one of those things that popped out to me. Like I think I might have even saw it in there before I even rented it. I must have.
That's a lost relic of the time, you know, this art specifically for magazines instead of just being screenshots that developers send out to PR people. That was such a cool thing. And it's also neat to imagine Nintendo, you know, that was a time when they could have been promoting Super Mario Brothers 2 or some of their own stuff. But,
yeah,
you know, they were putting a third-party game out there, you know, on the cover, really doing those third-party relations.
Well, they must have, again, the great thing that they must have had back in the day is being able to preview this stuff before throwing it on covers, at least having some kind of, like, you think about having some kind of like beta code on an NES cart that they could look at before selecting that cover. But it was something that I just wanted to mention because it is one of those memories that I kind of connect with it. But before we go on, do you guys have any kind of like final thoughts? Again, I'm just kind of one of those guys that just went back in and rented that game over and over and over again, and just like to bounce around on that cane pogo stick. That was a fantastic invention, unless he was just super athletic and was able to do that on his own strength.
Trey, you go first.
Again, we might be getting Trey going in and out because of the
I think we are.
Internet.
I will go first, then.
Oh, okay.
So, I like you, Kevin, I rented it just a ton of times, but never owned it, which is sort of a strange thing to do, you know, because it costs, what, $4 or $5 every time you rent a game, and then if you rent it several times, you probably could have just owned it. But anyway, that's a side note. I liked the game a lot more than Metroid. I could tell the similarities between the two as a kid, you know, like this idea of backtracking through levels and, you know, going back to previous locations. But it was just a lot more user friendly than Metroid. It was what I wanted Metroid to be at the time. And so I remember just, you know, thinking about that and like renting them both, like even on the same weekend and kind of comparing them. And feeling like, you know, why can't Metroid be more like DuckTales, which is sort of funny in retrospect.
No, you're 100% right. And that is a great point that you brought up, not only the backtracking, but how cool it was to revisit previous levels to get stuff that you needed to enter into other levels. Like if you go to the African mines, one of the kids will say, you can't get in here because the key for it is in Transylvania. So it automatically bounces you to Transylvania, and then certain mirrors activate so you can start using those mirrors. And then you can grab that key, you jump into another mirror, and then you bounce back right into the African mines. And for some reason, like, I was a huge, like, Sliders nut back in the day. Any kind of, like, parallel dimension type stuff, or being able to just revisit areas that you might – Or even sequels where you got to like visit areas and revisit characters from the past. When you got to like just something as simple, it sounds dumb, but going back into Transylvania for a completely different purpose other than beating the level, you're just like basically going in, grabbing that key, getting out, and then going and continuing through the African mines. I thought that was really inventive, and it's something that they didn't even need to do. But they put it in there, and if anyone thinks that the original Metroid on NES is a better game than DuckTales, they're nuts.
Yeah, I mean, me as a 6-year-old or whatever, I realized that. So you're spot on with that, Kevin.
It's just way more complicated, and it is in terms of the world to go visit, it is so much more enjoyable than the black backgrounds of Metroid, which. Again, I'll play Metroid 2 over Metroid any day, even that's in black and white. So
yeah,
let's give Trey one more shot. You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Okay. I don't know what, I had a big lag spike. So
oh no, it's, no problem. That guy's doing a really shitty job down the street from you. So
it's with Comcast.
Any last thoughts? Like again, anything that or memories that come up when you think of DuckTales, when you think back to that time when you were playing it?
You know, obviously the quality of the game. I like DuckTales better than most of the Disney games I played, but I kind of attribute this game to turning me on to Disney as a whole. You know, Mickey Mouse obviously is the face of Disney, but as far as me and Disney video games, I played DuckTales first before any other ones. But after I played that, I was more interested in their property. So, you know, I looked up games like Mickey Mousecapades, other, yep, you know, NES games that they had, and I attribute all that to DuckTales because it had such a, you know, profound effect on me. So as a kid, it was a good way to, you know, enter the world of Disney, I guess I would say.
Last anecdote, did either of you guys play DuckTales 2 when it came out?
I did not. I didn't know there was one until I was older.
Yeah, same here. And the prices are much lower for it on eBay. Anecdotal evidence. I found out this last week.
Yeah, but I mean, DuckTales 2 is quite rare. It was one of the really late releases on the NES, but it's a game that I think might be worth going back to at some point, but it is something I'm going to have to wait till I get to Japan because it is the US version is super expensive. It's like it can run like 60, 70 bucks. And
made a US version?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. It's like no one knows about it.
Yeah. It was the Famicom version I was looking at that was so cheap on eBay. It was like 10 bucks or something.
Yeah, exactly. Man, can't wait.
So we might have to do that.
Yeah, no. Yeah. We will absolutely do a DuckTales 2 episode, and hopefully now that the new one is coming out, Nintendo is able to throw 1 and 2 up on the virtual consoles, on the Wii U and the 3DS, just because finding a good-looking copy of DuckTales 2 on the NES is going to run you quite a lot of money. So that's
interesting.
Yeah, that's it for, you know, the fuzzy memories of DuckTales. Again, fantastic box art, beautiful purple cover, which Capcom seemed to be using as a trend. You can see it in Mega Man 2 as well, with the cover and the label of the game. And again, one thing I want to clear up on the history or the motivation for DuckTales is that I thought all of his money got stolen in the beginning of the game, but I guess that greedy bastard was just looking for the five treasures of the world, like the five most expensive treasures, and he just wanted more money. So I thought it was like a redemption story. It was just a greedy son of a bitch story. So that's it for this segment.
The subtitle of the game, though, right, is DuckTales: A Capitalist Adventure.
Oh, it should have been. I'm going to write that on my copy at least. Stick around.
Yeah, just put that on there in Sharpie, the way people do their names. That's fine.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Actually, do that on your friend's copy.
Right. Or write it on your Wii if they ever put it on the virtual console. Yeah. Whatever.
From 1990, we're back in 2013, and it's a little bit more polluted. The U.S. dollar isn't as strong, but we got copies of DuckTales, putting them back into the NES. And I have to say, going back to this game has been really weird because I never owned this game, like I said, back when I was younger, when it was out and it was a viable option to go into the KB Toys and pick up a copy. But going back today and having access to it, enforcing myself, the great thing about this podcast and one of the reasons why I started it was to make myself beat some of these games, or at least put in a lot of effort to try to beat some of these games and experience them the way they're meant to be. And going back to DuckTales, I found, it's hard. Like, it's probably not hard for 1990s NES game. Like, it's not Ninja Gaiden hard. But when you go and play it right now, like we mentioned in that first segment, that pogo mechanic is kind of hard to pick up because you got to press jump and then down to get that pogo mechanic going. And also, to kind of keep your momentum with that pogo, you have to make sure that you're not like landing on corners, and you have to hit enemies at the perfect arc. And at least I found, going back and when I was attacking enemies, that the hit detection was not so good. Like, I would, swear to God, hit enemies straight on in the middle from a perfect altitude, and I would still get hit, whether it was, I guess, me letting off the down button on the D-pad too soon, or the game being being less than fair, I would say. Going into, like, man, when you have to go into the Amazon and go against those bees that are just constantly coming at you when you're trying to get through that stage, and I swear there's one part where Launchpad, like, is trying to help you go across a gap, and there's this bee that would just, like, time up perfectly every single time. So no matter what you did, when you used his help to get across that gap, you would, every single time, no avoiding it. I swear to God, like, I played through this level, like, 50 times trying to avoid that bee when you're getting off Launchpad's, like, rope that's extended from his helicopter. I'd get hit every single time, and it was just, in terms of the difficulty, I was surprised how hard that learning curve was to get the attacks down. But once you did, and you got in a rhythm, it was awesome. Like, I don't know, Josh, kind of like going back to it, was it kind of hard for you to pick this stuff back up too?
The one thing I want to say based on what you were saying is about hit detection. Mm-hmm. And there's really a lot of risk, you know, if you think that you're hitting an enemy and you're not, because, you know, by the time that you come down on them with your pogo stick, which is a cane, I know, but when you come down with that attack, you're taking damage if you don't actually land the hit, and you don't have a whole lot of room for damage in that game.
Oh man,
so
three or four hits,
that was something
it.
I experienced a couple of times. Of, you know, I thought I was defeating an enemy, and then I realized actually I'm almost dead. Mm-hmm. And you know, games are somewhat better at that these days. Sometimes they're not. Still, I think that if I remember correctly from playing DuckTales, which I should because it was today. The enemy flashes, kind of like blinks when you hit it to show you that you made contact. Mm-hmm. That's essentially the visual cue. But I don't believe there's really much of a sound effect to, you know, a sound of impact, which can be really helpful.
No, I mean, only like the main level guys, like there's the standard enemies. They were mostly one-hit dudes, but you're totally right. When you go to the bosses, like... that's about it. That's the only feedback that you get is that blinking, and then also it's really hard to avoid them once you do hit them. You got to get the hell out of there.
That's right. And most of the bosses aren't really that difficult compared to just navigating through the levels. That tends to be the harder part to me.
Exactly. How about you, Trey? Going back to it, any difficulties with the learning curve to get through the stages?
This game made me question myself. I think the current generation of games has spoiled me. You know, Demon Souls, Dark Souls excluded.
Yeah.
Games are a lot easier now than they used to be. And I think I was better at games when I was a kid than I am now.
Well, this is a kid's game, man. This is for little 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds.
I struggled. I will not repeat everything I said while playing this game, but I'll let you know I struggled. It was a DuckTales kind of whipped my ass. But I did beat it. I celebrated like a 5-year-old kid when I did beat it. But the hit mechanics, they do bug me a little bit. The bees, I don't ever want to see a bee in a DuckTales game again. But I don't remember having this much trouble with the game as when I was a kid as I did now. So I'm either thinking either I lost my touch with games or just the current generation of games have kind of made things like retro wise a little harder. I don't know.
Josh, I think you alluded to it earlier in the show when you talked about the, you know, the multiple attacks and what they were trying to do with basically two buttons. And you kind of have that pogo attack, and then you also have the golf shot, which you can use to hit boulders into enemies. And I think what we kind of ran into is just only kind of having really maybe one, if not two attacks. It was just kind of hard to get around some of these situations. You look at, and this is another thing that I wrote down, was the diversity. Every single level has completely different enemies, except for you will see, in some levels, you'll see chomp plants and you'll see spiders, but for the most part, like we're mentioning Transylvania, you have mummies, you have ghosts, you have the skeletons that kind of like cripple apart, kind of like in Super Mario Brothers 3, and the diversity that you have across every single level made it so you literally had to relearn how to attack all these guys every single time you went into a new level. So I found that I just had to, all right, man, I'm just going to play the Amazon until I can beat it. So I just kept playing it and playing it and playing it until I learned all the patterns for all the enemies, knowing exactly. And this is like, again, going back to what it was like to play NES games, Super Nintendo games, Genesis games, where you had to learn the enemy patterns and you had to almost trick the game so you would like move sideways just a little bit just so you could get that enemy to pop out and then back up and then go back and go forward again so they would disappear so you wouldn't have to deal with them. Like, that's the kind of stuff I was starting to have to implement to make progress through this game. And I know there's going to be people out there listening. It's like, DuckTales, that game's easy. What are you guys talking about? It is not. Like, even from that first level, no. The Amazon, you're going to be – I – thankfully, with my PlayStation 3 or whatever, I don't throw controllers, but I literally threw my controllers and said, like, F you to my NES, and then walked away multiple times during this game where I'd have to just get up, go do something else, and get away from that, because I was getting, like, that 8-bit frustration where you're just like, you son of a bitch, this isn't fair. Like, I kept saying, this isn't fair. And it just wasn't.
Have you guys played Spelunky?
No. I heard that will make me want to kill myself.
Yeah, it's... the trade, did you say you have or haven't?
I have not.
First of all, I recommend anybody who's listening to this should play Spelunky, because if you are listening to a nostalgic retro video game podcast, the Spelunky is for you, either the free version on PC, even has the appropriate art style for that, or the Xbox Live Arcade version and soon-to-be PSN version, which with the redone art, still very retro feel. Long story short, though, why I'm bringing this game up right now is that it feels... I just kept thinking about Spelunky while navigating through these areas. First of all, because like African mines, you know, and stuff like that will make you, in the Amazon, will make you think a little bit about the environments that you see in Spelunky as well. But also just how difficult it can be to navigate through the environment in those games. In both of those games, it feels really similar. And I just would have to think that the people who, I think it was this one guy actually, who designed Spelunky, was channeling his inner DuckTales, because he's someone around our same age. And the games just, they're not often compared, but I think they should be.
That's a great point. And the stuff that I've seen of Spelunky, the level design and the level layout is totally reminiscent of what you're going to see in DuckTales. And that reminded me not only the diversity in the enemies, but also like the level layouts, although it did have like your stereotypical ice stage where you would slip and slide on the ice. Like, I swear they copy pasted. I think it was from Crash Man stage in Mega Man 2. It was Crash Man or Quick.
Exactly. I think Crash Man.
Yeah. And when you're slipping and sliding over the tiles, and just put that right into DuckTales. And did you guys like, there's tons of secrets in this game. Like, you could,
there really is.
You could jump over like the walls and kind of go into the menu on the top, like on Super Mario Brothers, when you're jumping in the underworld and you can kind of jump on those bricks and you're like basically overlaid onto the stats on the menu, and you could find a bunch of different secrets. Did you guys run into a lot of that stuff?
Yeah, I found a couple of secrets, just like, you know, they like some of the nephews and was her Webigail?
She'd
tell you about certain secrets that you could find. Like, you know, I remember one that sticks out is the one in Transylvania. There's like a wall you can walk through, and then there's like a little underground area where you can kind of pogo your way all the way to the end. There's a couple treasures there. So yeah, I mean, I found a good bit of secrets there.
That's a long one, Trey. That path way underground. Uh-huh. Like, you pogo a super long time. Yeah. Get there.
Yep.
That made me think about like the, I can't remember which Metal Gear game it is where you climb that ladder for such a long time. Is that two or three? I think it's three.
If it's three, I don't remember, because I haven't played three. I've only played one and two. So
still, I just got that vibe, you know, this long traversal to get to this thing. And I want to say one other thing about those secrets is I love that. I love like walking past the score and the characters' names and everything to get to something that's hidden away. Like, that's so, it's so like postmodern or like self-aware, you know?
It's like breaking the fourth wall on a television show. It's like you're basically just like breaking, I guess, what would that be? The first wall.
Well,
I guess it would still be the fourth wall, but you're staying confined within the game, but basically just saying, yeah, no, it's a game, but sorry, I gotta go get this cool little secret treasure that's over here that's gonna make a cool sound when I pick it up.
That's right. And you know, I don't know how they would do that today. Maybe like on the Wii U, like you find yourself navigating to the game pad or something, you know? That's the only thing I could really think of that would be quite like that today.
That's a good point. They really don't do it.
Yeah. Like, you know, it's
so,
I guess,
serious
sort of
these days with all games.
Right. Cinematic narrative.
Yeah, you know, got to go save Maria, all that stuff. So another thing that I wrote down, I guess we did hit on that. Lots of secret items, and the the amount of stuff that kind of stuck with me when I saw like a landmark, when I would go to the, I think it was in the Amazon. But anyways, like you could see like specific landmarks throughout levels were like, wait, there's a treasure around here, right? I swear I remember a treasure around here. Or even like the cool things where you would have incredibly difficult tasks like bouncing over enemies. In the African mines, there's one part where you're bouncing over like these alien squid-looking dudes over a large gap. And if you can nail every single one of those hits and keep basically comboing off those guys, you can find a secret treasure. And again, you get such a great amount of satisfaction when they play that music tone to let you know that you did something that was extraordinary.
Well said, well said. Especially, you know, the audio cues. And that was a big thing of game design in that time. You know, like Zelda did that as well.
And I will say, going back to this game and reattacking it is one of the big things that stuck out to me was, again, how across the board every single stage has fantastic music where I don't necessarily get that feeling. Maybe in Mega Man 2, but not necessarily in Mega Man 3. And they just they totally brought their A game, and you just get such a mood painted for you every time you step into one of these levels and those tracks start. It's it really is something special that you don't really get these days. You don't really go into a game and say, "Oh man, like this." Like again, I'll use. Man, that third level of Gears of War, when they played that song, like it was just so, it just got me into the mood and it got me, you know, really excited to go shoot these dudes and cut them up and stuff like that. It's something that I think might have been lost in our current gen stuff, except for, you know, maybe the games like we were talking off the air about The Last of Us, where they can get some kind of emotional response, but it's more serious. It's not just like, hell yeah, like I'm excited to go play this and jump around on my pogo stick for a little bit.
Yeah, that's not a game that's all about fun mechanics, right? As much as it is seeing how far you can push pathos or emotions in a video game.
Yeah, exactly. Any final thoughts about the going back to DuckTales other than I still think it has fantastic box art and it looks fantastic on my 32-inch Sony Wega TV?
I don't think we mentioned the music being good. Hint, hint.
No.
We have several times. I'm just. Yeah. Hey, it's really that good.
This game has music in it, right?
Yeah, it does have music.
Okay, I played it with the sound off.
Oh my goodness!
I'm joking.
Yeah. How dare you?
Yeah. No, I cranked the sound off.
One
glorious.
Thing,
definitely.
One thing. One final thing I will mention about the sound is that. The thing with the NES and its sound chip and its sound capabilities, it made it so whenever you had a sound effect happen, you lost part of the stage music. So with DuckTales, it's one of those things that I noticed now, not so much back then, but with the with the overlaps of the sound effects from your character or enemies and the music, it still matches up perfectly, and they take out notes that are so, so deep in the track that you don't really notice that they're gone unless you really pay attention. So I think that's something that is important, because talking about Zelda last week, we were talking about the waves that kind of pop in, and when those waves come in and you use your sword at the same time, like the music cuts out. Because there's not enough sound channels
for it. Wow. I didn't really think about that in DuckTales, but you're right. And I think subconsciously I noticed that. That's interesting. Kind of on the same level of what you're talking about, did you guys notice the slowdown from time to time?
Yes. When a lot of stuff was on the screen at one time. Ooh,
right. Yeah, it started chugging. I don't know what the frame
rate. Characters would start flickering really bad, and then, you know...
It's the Mega Man 2 engine, man. It's
pretty much
what we saw in Mega Man 2 when there's multiple projectiles, multiple enemies, and you're moving at the same time. That NES, that whatever it was, like the 3 megahertz processor just could not handle all that craziness going on.
Yeah, smoke is pouring out.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So I wanted to talk about that. I was able to make that point about slowdown. And then in terms of visual cues, though, you know, Trey was just saying that they start flickering. And so let's say you're attacking an enemy at that moment. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it can become sort of confusing if you've made contact or what's going on. So those can be really kind of bad points in the game when you start having slowdown while fighting a lot of enemies, which is when you're going to have that slowdown. But that's really my only complaint. And also... the very first level, the Amazon, that is the first one, right? The first one listed, at least. Mm-hmm. It just sort of suffers from the same thing that a lot of NES games had at the time of just like a blue background, you know, just like this one plain background. Yeah. But the rest of the game does not, you know, the rest of the game has really intricate, like detailed looking backgrounds. So that still is not a complaint I would leverage against the whole game. And it almost makes me wonder if, you know, that if they were designing that level while just sort of getting used to, that was sort of like their trial run, right? Like just like a concept of the game, like mm-hmm. a proof of concept to get approval to make it or whatever. Because when you look at how much more detailed the rest of the levels are, it does feel kind of different.
I have a question for you guys. Did you guys know there was a Game Boy version?
Yeah, of course.
It's very similar to the NES version. Obviously, it's got the limitations of the Game Boy compared to the NES, but I was pretty surprised at how similar the game was.
But, were you able to play it?
I wasn't able to play it, but I was doing some research on the NES game, and I noticed there was a Game Boy version, so I looked at some YouTube videos of it, and I was pretty surprised. So
Capcom had some top-notch Game Boy, whether you want to call them ports or not. Like, even I thought the Mega Man 1 and 2 on the Game Boy were great. The music for Mega Man 2 on the Game Boy, you're like, holy crap, how is this coming out of my Game Boy? They were able to pull off some great tricks. And same thing with DuckTales. Again, the music on the Game Boy version is equally as good comparative to the hardware that it is on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, Capcom became the only third party I actually knew of back then. As a kid, you know, as like a 6 or 7 year old, I knew the Capcom brand because I just started associating, okay, they have this cool box scheme and they make games like Mega Man and, you know, Strider. And then there's all this Disney stuff that's really good, or at least all of it seemed really good to me at the time. So like I knew Sega and I knew Nintendo, but then all of a sudden, you know, Capcom was just as important because their games felt just like they were of a higher breed, you know, with the music quality and the controls always feeling really tight and just interesting characters.
You're really lucky that you didn't want to always rent Back to the Future on NES because you liked the movie as a 3-year-old and constantly wondering why this is a piece of shit.
Back to the Future is a great movie. The game never got better.
No, it's terrible.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I really am. I've had that experience before.
I'm sorry, Trey. You were going to say something?
Oh, I was going to say, you know, Capcom was so like revered back in the day. I'm just wondering what happened. Like compare Capcom of the 80s and 90s to the Capcom of today.
Oh, they still make some good stuff. They just make some terrible decisions time to time. But they still have some weird, interesting stuff like Dragon's Dogma that comes out, and you know, again they're in the process, like everyone else, of whoring out their games and just creating sequels and sequels and sequels, and then dude broing things up like
Dead
Rising 3. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, that's a good example. And, you know, they've outsourced a lot of their stuff in recent years. Like, they make all the original, like when they're launching a new IP, like Dead Rising or Lost Planet or whatever it might be, they make it internally. But then their strategy has started to become, you know, outsource it some to Canadian or American teams or whatever.
Yeah.
Which, nothing against Canada or America. It's just these aren't teams that had that initial vision, you know?
Well, Inafune left. When Kenji Inafune left Capcom, you could tell like they kind of lost some of their spark. And even I think the head guy, actually I'm not even gonna say it because I don't like podcasts where people say stuff and they think it's right and it's not. I'm not even gonna say it. So
But you're right though, Inafune, I mean, that was a big blow to the company. I mean, there's no other way to look at it but that. And, you know, and that's completely relevant to bring him up right now because he was directly involved in making this game what it was, you know. Yeah. This was something he worked on and he was involved in the Mega Man engine. So I guess Trey's question of what happened to Capcom, and we're sitting here talking so much about Inafune, you know, and how much we love this game that he made. He'll always be missed.
He's not dead. I bought Soul Sacrifice in Japan, and I, even though that game was not very good, I think he has a future. And
yeah, he does. I think I probably did start to turn that into a eulogy a bit.
He just isn't going to be making Mega Man, and it doesn't look like anyone's going to make Mega Man games for a while, except for like RPG, Mega Man,
Smash
Battle
Brothers.
Network stuff. Smash Brothers, but not like a dedicated...
Oh, yeah. He's a guest.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about that. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to be right back. We've got some great retro news coming out of E3 2013. And then also some recommendations for you guys to look at for your own retro gaming collection. So stick around. We'll be right back. For the final segment, and we're going to be going over a lot of the E3 news from that past week. And surprisingly, one of the interesting bits out of E3 is that they're continuing to show off more and more pieces of the DuckTales remastered game that is being done by not so successful lately, but great designer Warren Spector is fronting that up, and they're pretty much redoing the whole game, making lots of changes to the layout of the levels and remastering the music. So far, from what I saw, the changes are kind of hit and miss, and it's going to be hard to really tell if they're going to be well implemented until we can get our like hands on the controllers. But the feedback that has been posted on sites like Destructoid did a piece on it and had some pretty nice things to say about it. And they were able to post some pieces of the music from the remastering. And it's interesting, but I think some people out there are going to definitely miss the 8-bit music that accompanies their memories of the original game. Josh, did you get to check out any of the DuckTales coverage or see any of the screenshots and see what it looks like?
Yeah, and I think it looks really nice. You know, I think it's a game that so many developers, and I think at PAX when they first showed this game off, they had like a bunch of developer quotes like in that initial trailer. So it's inspired so many people that they want to do right by this game in working on it. And so it's not like ugly. Like I think about the Rocket Knight Adventures like reboot game that came out on Xbox Live Arcade and PSN a couple years back. And it was just like so ugly compared to the original game. I feel like DuckTales remastered looks really nice. So I'm happy with it, but I share the same concerns about the music as someone who really loves that like 8-bit style.
Is that what we like the most about it, is the music, Trey?
That's my favorite thing about it.
God, I think that might be all of our favorite. That might be everyone's favorite part about the game, is just the music, not necessarily the gameplay itself.
It's music with a game as well.
Yeah.
Right? You listen to the music and you can play the game a little bit if you want.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or just like,
pretty much.
You know, start the game in a certain level. You got about 560 seconds or 550 seconds before the timer goes off, and then you got to select a different level and hear a new track, I guess.
Yeah. Talk, Trey. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, one thing I noticed, you know, I watched a video on IGN right before we started recording the podcast of the gameplay, and mm-hmm. you know, some of the stuff does look familiar, and I'm excited about that because, you know, I mean, obviously, hopefully, well, I don't want to say obviously, but hopefully it's a little bit more refined, you know, because we were kind of talking about earlier, the gameplay can be frustrating at times, but you know, from what I saw, you know, they added cutscenes. That's kind of cool. Little cutscenes where Scrooge talks to Launchpad and other stuff like that. So that's neat. And you know, I'm cautiously optimistic, but you know, I'm also remember other remakes. Even though Capcom didn't do this one, one of my favorite NES or Super Nintendo games was Turtles in Time, and you saw what a disaster that port was, or that recreation was. Did you guys play that on Xbox Live Arcade?
Yeah,
I did too. It was very disappointing.
It was very disappointing. I don't know. You know, they should have just ported that one straight over instead of trying to remake it. So after playing that and, you know, other stuff, I'm just, you know, I'm a little cautious, but you know, I'm hoping they can do the right thing with it. So I liked what I saw in the gameplay.
Maybe it's the case where Warren Spector just has a much better love. I mean, he's talked in the past about how much he loves DuckTales, but maybe he has enough respect for the original to not really mess with it like they did in, like, 3D-ify it in Turtles in Time. But the one thing that you mentioned was the cutscenes, and they actually, you know, believe it or not, the guy who voiced Scrooge McDuck is still alive. So they brought him back to reprise the role, and he's doing the voice work for Scrooge. And that is probably the coolest thing that I saw about the remake, is like, we're almost going to get a new DuckTales cartoon out of this game.
And that's got to be a good experience for him too. It's got to be like a trip down memory lane, a real nostalgic feeling. So going to get a lot of effort and a lot of, you know, good quality from him. That's cool. I did not know that they had gotten the original voice actor. So that's, you know, you just hyped me up a little bit more for the game just on that alone. That's awesome.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the people who have these consoles right now, you know, are similar age range to us, to where they remember playing DuckTales as a kid, or maybe they watched the show in syndication or something later on. And so it is just cool to be able to continue that series finally, you know, after this much time.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I want to say that relates to DuckTales Remastered is Shovel Knight. Pretty sure that you guys are familiar with Shovel Knight. We talked about it a little bit before the show. And if you haven't looked up Shovel Knight, it's not a retro game, but it's made in the style of a retro game by a new development team called Yacht Club. And Yacht Club are an offshoot of Way Forward. So they're people who used to work at Way Forward. And if you look at Shovel Knight, it's coming out on Wii U and 3DS, by the way, as an original game. If you look at Shovel Knight, there's a mechanic in which the knight who bears a shovel, hence the name, bounces on that shovel, not unlike the pogo stick kind of mechanic with the cane in DuckTales. And so you just start to wonder if maybe these people were directly involved in DuckTales Remastered and then took some of what they had learned about that mechanic and worked and took it over to this game, Shovel Knight. So if you like DuckTales, you're probably really going to be into Shovel Knight, is the moral of the story. It just looks like it's going to be a great game.
In not so happy news out of E3, we talked a little bit about our predictions from last week and hoping that Nintendo would somehow come and bring it at this E3 with their interesting direction with the Nintendo Direct, but we got no real news on Virtual Console and no news on a universal login that would go across the multiple systems and services that they have, which was a little bit of a bummer, but maybe that's not the place to talk about Virtual Consoles in front of millions of people. Some good news came along with that, though.
Did you guys get a lot of video buffering during that?
It was impossible to watch.
Yeah, I was having I ended up having to watch the UK version, and even still, I had a bunch of like segments where it would just cut out. I didn't even get to see the Mario 3D Land or 3D World stuff because it was buffering in and out, and I couldn't complain about it on GAF because it was down. So.
Yeah, what do we do when we can't complain about things on GAF? It was a strange
GAF was down all week.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that was I felt so alone.
It was a bad week in the history of GAF.
Yeah. This is like one of those things where you saw how many people, and we're referencing neogaf.com for the people that are outside of the forum. It's a gigantic video game forum. It's probably one of the better ones out there, heavily moderated, so there's not any kind of stupid things being said, and if they are being said, it's usually followed up by a ban. But the site had a huge influx of people added to the site, like a bunch of junior members, right before E3, which was probably not the best idea. And it was literally down, like during press conferences it was down, then it was down for like 2 hours after the press conference, and it was more or less like that all week. But there were some highlights, some retro goodness that did come out of that. First, like Josh mentioned, there was some cool stuff on the eShop, like with Shovel Knight. And also we saw a sequel, or some more video to the sequel to A Link to the Past, which is now titled A Link Between Worlds, where, like we mentioned last week, they're using the same overworld and seemingly the same dark world as in the original Super Nintendo game, and then putting Link back in there for a completely new adventure, or at least a retelling of the adventure. I don't know how they're going to angle it and where is it going to be in the timeline, but I don't know what it's really going to turn into, but I'm feeling a lot better after we talked last week, and now I finally got to listen to the music of the game, and like a long piece of music from the game for the dungeon and for the overworld, where they had some direct feed from the headphone jack, and I'm feeling a lot better. Trey, you're our like resident super hardcore Zelda fan. What are now your feelings on the game now that you saw that, you know, minute and a half piece and now some longer, like 10 minute direct feed?
I'm not as excited about it.
Whoa.
Oh, it went down.
Yeah, it did go down.
Why is that?
You know, seeing all that stuff, it's like like we said earlier, it's the same map. Part of the appeal of Zelda games is discovering, like, I mean, even though you're in Hyrule, it's a different version of Hyrule every time. Seemingly, you're rediscovering this, you know, particular game's take on it. And I like, before, I haven't even like played this game yet, and I've already like piecing out, like, you know, where everything is. I'm sure there'll be minor tweaks to the map, but it's the same overworld. And that I kind of feel like when I boot that game up for the first time, that sense of adventuring out on my own, it's not going to have the same, you know, good feeling that the other ones did. Like Skyward Sword, you know, I didn't particularly care for that overall, but, you know, I still got to explore new lands and everything like that, and see the game's version of Hyrule. Or, you know, it just doesn't feel like, I'm just not, I don't know, the excitement just kind of dwindled.
The discovery, you know, is not there good for you this time.
There's no sense of discovery, because, I mean, A Link to the Past is my favorite Zelda game by far, and, you know, I've played that one so many times, I'm familiar with it, so I'm a little skeptical. I don't know, I'm glad it's not called A Link to the Past 2, I'm glad they did give it a different name.
It still is in Japan, though.
Oh, is it really?
It's still titled Link to the Past, or it's A Link Between Worlds, A Link to the Past 2, or something like that.
Oh, I don't know. I should be more optimistic, because I am a giant Zelda fan. I mean, if I wasn't deathly afraid of needles, I'd probably have the Triforce tattooed somewhere on me. But, you know, I'm just, I don't know.
Well, you saw in the direct feed, or whatever, like the off-camera feed, is that they went into, like, if you leave Link's house, or the house that he starts out with, and you go right a little bit, you go up across the bridge, and you go right a little bit, like you're going to the first dungeon that you're going to go to get that first medallion. There's a hidden fairy cave that's covered up that you need a bomb to get into. And they showed that like crumbled piece of the wall, the dude bombed it, and it's still a fairy cave. Like, I thought they would at least change that stuff around. Like, it would be some kind of alternate universe of the Link to the Past or something like that. But even that stuff's the same. So we're going to go bomb the same places for the fairies. Like, are we going to go bomb the same place for the heart pieces and find them in the same you know, parallel parts of the world and stuff like that. Like, that is, now that you bring that up, I'm like, oh yeah, maybe the music just got to me.
If they were going to do this type of game, like, you know, they could be hiding, you know, some knockout punches that'll make this game truly great, and I'm very hopeful that they are. But if they're going to keep most of the stuff the same, I would have rather seen like a 3D reincarnation in this game, like convert it to, like, you know, Ocarina of Time style, like where it's fully 3D.
And, you know, that's what Miyamoto, or maybe it was someone else, I think it was Miyamoto, though, was talking about, that they were kicking around that idea, that very idea.
Yeah. I would have liked to have seen that.
Yeah, and I wonder why they decided to go this route instead. If it was the idea of telling a different story seemed interesting to them, and maybe it will come out and just be unique enough, you know, that instead it'll just play on the right nostalgia. In terms of knowing where some of these items are already and that the map is the same, but then build on it in an interesting way. Or maybe it'll be the opposite route, which is, you know, it'll play into all of Trey's fears about what it is.
I'm a little nervous that Nintendo, you know, if they are saving something, like, I would think that they would want to show something to differentiate the game from A Link to the Past, like show something to get people hyped up. But, like, I'm really just watching like a 3DS graphical incarnation of A Link to the Past. So, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I haven't seen enough to get excited, like, get super excited. Of course, it's a Zelda game. Of course, I'm going to buy it day one, you know, just because I'm a loyal Zelda fan and I do love the franchise. But, you know, I just, you know, I haven't seen that one thing to say, oh, yes, I'm really excited about this game. It's just.
Well, here, I got a theory for you, Trey. It's going to make you feel a lot better. All right, this is my theory.
Okay.
Link, he and Zelda get married, all right? They have a kid named Link Jr. And Link Jr. is now just discovering Hyrule because he wakes up one morning and Link and Zelda are both kidnapped by Ganon, who is somehow unsealed from, you know, whatever dimension. And now that Link Jr. is out there, he gets to find all this stuff that, for some reason, Dad went and put them all back in the dungeons, decided to put the hammer back, decided to put the hookshot back, and said, hey, I don't need these heart containers anymore. I'm going to leave them for that next generation of Link, or that next reincarnation of that hero when he has to come back. So basically, it's whatever you want to say. It's The Legend of Zelda Jr., A Link to the Past 2.
Beautiful theory. Beautiful.
Yeah.
I especially like the part about him putting everything back carefully where it goes, because that's where the stuff goes.
Yeah, it's like, no, I'm done. Like, you're not one of those guys that just is going to be a glutton and a hoarder. Link's not a hoarder. He travels rather light. Like, when you start off with him, he has nothing. And he doesn't even have, like, a shield and a sword. Maybe he kept the shield and sword and put that stuff up on the wall, like in Wind Waker. But I think that the you know, again, it's Miyamoto. Maybe he's having kids now, and he wants to kind of pass down Zelda to his kids, and it's going to be super easy. It's going to be like 2-hit kills for every boss, and you're going to be able to do like checkpoints every 5 minutes in the dungeon.
I need you to stop trolling me now.
I mean, who knows? Maybe he is just pissed that people keep saying, make a sequel, or so. I don't know. I don't know if people are saying that.
Yeah, they'll even implement the old Mario method. If you can't beat the level after a certain amount of times, they'll beat it for you.
Oh, yeah. Like, that was popping up. I've been playing through Donkey Kong Country Returns, and, like, there's a little dude that pops up to try to help you out. And I'm like, I got this. I can die 50 times. I'm not going to – I can close my DS. I don't need your help.
Yeah.
On some more retro news, there are a couple interesting remakes that are coming. First off, HD remake of Oddworld. Josh, and I know you're kind of a little excited for this.
Yeah, if you guys have played the PlayStation 1 version of that game, it was just it was very unique for its time, and it still feels unique today. You know, it's a game that we should look back at before that remake comes out. Because it still holds up really nicely, and it's just it's a game that deserves to be remade, and I'm glad to see it actually happening. And you could see the applause that it received at that at the Sony conference, right, when the developer was playing it live. Mm-hmm. After several other indie developers showed off their wares, the crowd really responded, and that's because it is such a great game. So I was just pleased to see a game that hasn't been remade and redone to death being remade for the first time.
My only memory of Oddworld is when it came, I got a bundled copy of, Munch's Odyssey on Xbox when I got my launch Xbox.
Yeah.
Was that the bad one? The one that wasn't received so good?
I can't remember. Was that the third-person shooter kind of game?
No, that was Stranger's Wrath. I think it was Munch's Odyssey. It was basically a world that I just couldn't get into. It was kind of like a gross-looking world, almost along the lines of, not Battletoads, but something maybe like a more modern, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm sick, folks. I'm sorry.
You're making sense. And the game's also kind of hard. Maybe that's why you thought about Battletoads.
Killer Instinct is back, coming off the hot Nintendo Ultra 64 arcade joint. Killer Instinct is back for, I guess it's, there was Killer Instinct, there was Killer Instinct 2 in the arcade, which ended up being Killer Instinct Gold on the Nintendo 64. And now people have been asking for it, and now we finally have it with TJ Combo and Glacier and Cinder and Orbit or whatever her name was? Orchid.
Orchid, yeah.
Do you guys give a crap?
I was trying to pull up real quick. I'm on the 3G phone, so my speed's not that quick. I was trying to pull up a cricket noise, but did not work out. If Microsoft didn't own it, if it was on Multiply, I'd be a little bit more excited. Correct me if I'm wrong, though. I heard a rumor where you get one character.
It's free to play.
One's free.
It's free to, and you have to pay for all the other ones.
Correct.
Yep. Nope. Not interested.
Is that a combo breaker for you, Trey?
That's a very big combo breaker.
All right.
We had to do something like that, you know.
In Beverly, Massachusetts, there's this restaurant called Nick's Roast Beef, which has the best roast beef sandwiches in the world. If you're ever local, go by there and check it out. And they must have had some kind of like great deal with Nintendo, because we got Killer Instinct in there as an arcade game. Then right after that, we got Cruisin' USA, then Cruisin' World, then Cruisin' Erotica. I don't know why that happened, but I remember walking in there and seeing that, like, man, dude, they got a friggin' Nintendo 64. Like, the architecture is in that arcade machine, and it's like 1995. It's not even out yet. And I saw that, and I thought that game was so awesome. I thought the game was super cool looking. Like, I would get maybe 50, like, the game was 50 cents. It was one of those more expensive games. And I might get 50 cents while we're waiting for our food to get done and go and play around and get my ass kicked by the computer. But I remember as soon as that came out for the Super Nintendo, I had to have it. And I played the crap out of that game. I loved it. And then Nintendo 64 one came out, and not so much, and now I don't care.
It came on that really cool black cart, though. You know, we got to talk about that.
Black cart, man.
Yeah, it did.
And killer cuts. It came with killer cuts, like a CD before everyone had CD players.
Oh, man. I remember that. Holy crap.
And the music, I don't care what you say about that game. The music on the Super Nintendo cart it's amazing how good that music is in terms of the clarity. And it's just like, like, it's that butt rock, like, awesome. Like, before there was like the Gears of War soundtrack. For some reason, I'm mentioning that as a reference a lot today, but there was a lot of like that kind of like hardcore kind of music that would pop up before matches and stuff like that. And it just kind of spoke to me, because I was never really good until I actually got like Street Fighter and learned how to play it and learned that that was a much better game. This was appealing to me because I could just hit like forward, forward, punch, and Cinder would just keep comboing the son of a bitch until he got like an ultra combo or a like you said, ultra combo. Like, you'd have that awesome announcer that was, to me, even better than Mortal Kombat, because you got like this guy that was telling you all the time when you're doing cool stuff instead of Mortal Kombat, where you just kind of like pop his head in for sometimes random reasons, but maybe I don't like
instant gratification in the game.
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah. No. That's a great way to put it. It was like for people that could not do the Hadoukens and did not how to do Sonic Booms, they could basically keep pressing forward and punch. It was a literal button mash contest in that game, and maybe it's something we grew out of. But from what they showed at E3 and at the press conference, I have no hope for that game. It doesn't even look good. I'm not even counting like the free to play stuff, which is stupid, and it's like everyone needs to do a free to, like, even Nintendo said they're doing a free to play game now. Like, you don't have to do this, guys. Like,
right. It's like, unless you have an idea and you realize that should be on a free to play type of payment system, don't set out to make a free to play game just to make one.
Yeah, don't like bend the product to fit into that hole that you want it to fit in. Just make a good game and it will sell. People are starting, I don't know. This is a whole nother subject, but we can pretty much say, unless it comes in like a completely black case with a completely black disc and another like double CD with Killer Cuts 2 in it, no buy. Oh, but it won't be. It's free to play. It won't even have a name. Never mind.
Yeah, well, we'll just download the music, I guess.
Yeah. And then finally, Trey, you got to the cool thing that one of the cool things Nintendo did with their Nintendo Direct is they also had a bunch of kiosks and Best Buys across the country that allowed people to check out the Wii U games that were on the floor at E3, and you got to check some of that stuff out. So what were some of your impressions?
Well, first of all, you know, I work in the mobile section of Best Buy currently, so, you know, our store was one of the ones that was lucky enough to get picked, and Wednesday is the first day that they were there, and the thing that I was blown away by was how many people showed up. I think the Nintendo rep said there was over 150 people in line at one time. It was crazy.
Wow.
How many people were there. So, I mean, it goes to show Nintendo, you know, does have a lot of loyal fans, so I'm hoping they can deliver on the games. I know the Nintendo rep decently because I worked at GameStop like years and years ago, and she came in there, and I met her even before that when I was like really interested in the GameCube. She was doing some promotional stuff for it, and talked with her then. But I got to basically cut in line yesterday when I got off my shift. I got off at 4, and they were there for another hour, so she let me kind of cut in line for a little bit to play some of the games. I got to play all 4 of the demos. They have a 10-minute limit on them. Or, like, I think Mario Kart, you could do one race. Super Mario 3D World, you could play one level. Wind Waker, you could play for 10 minutes, but I did 5 on that. And then Donkey Kong, you could do one level. I loved all of them. I'd say the one that was the least impressive was Mario 3D World. I don't know. Like, I like 3D Land a lot. It's one of my favorite 3DS games. I was hoping for, I guess, something on the tier of Galaxy 3.
Yeah, those two.
But, you know, it's gonna be interesting. The multiplayer aspect of it was cool because when I played it, 3 other people were playing. It's basically a 3D version of the new Super Mario Brothers games. It's for Wii and Wii U. It's fun, but it's so hectic that, you know, like I've got my reservations about it. But it's something.
Who did you play as?
Luigi.
Yeah, that's how I would play as too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I got like Nintendo rep gave me this cool little coin. That's got your Luigi on it. I got a Luigi hat and a Mario Kart flag that had Luigi on it. So, you know, I'm all about Luigi. I hate Mario.
Shuhei Yoshida got a coin too. That same coin.
Oh,
that's awesome.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say. So, and all the characters play differently, right? So Luigi jumps really high. It's like Mario 2, essentially.
Right. Exactly. Toad's quicker, but he can't jump that high or far. Peach can do her float that she had in Super Mario Brothers 2. It's very familiar, and then like it's basically you take the multiplayer aspects of the new Super Mario games and you put them in Super Mario 3D Land, and voila, you've got Super Mario 3D World. So it was okay. I wasn't as blown away by it. Mario Kart 8 was probably my favorite one. It was a lot of fun. The track that I got to play on was very cool. The way it like turned upside down and the hovering worked on it and everything like that. It was a blast to play. It was a lot of fun. You know, it was me and one other person. Two people could play that at the same time. So I smoked him. He was Mario and I was Luigi, and I took care of business.
And that game is gorgeous.
Oh yeah, it's really good, really really good. And I'll tell you, Donkey Kong Country. I can't remember. Is it like
Tropical Freeze?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. It was fun. It's basically, you know, you can tell it's a direct sequel to Donkey Kong Country Returns. It looks really good. It plays really well. I'm excited about it. You know, I don't have a lot of impressions from that one. It's just if you like Donkey Kong Country Returns, you're going to like this one because it's just a high def, you know, more interactive game compared to the other one. And then Wind Waker. We've all played Wind Waker, or at least I hope we have. Beautiful looking game. It is unreal how amazing that game looks in high def. They have done a fantastic job. I spent 2.5 of my 5 minutes just like staring in awe at the game. It looks so good. So, you know, all four.
Where
of them,
did they start you? Just like at the beginning of the game, essentially.
There's a boss fight that you can do. I think it's the first boss.
Okay.
One of my coworkers was playing around with it. He was like wandering around the first island. I was like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "I don't even know. I'm just running around." Okay, but you know, I'd say Mario Kart. You know, I was telling oh man, excuse me, I'm about to sneeze. Excuse me, sorry. I was telling Kevin earlier. Mario Kart 8 was the most popular one. The Nintendo rep told me about 80% of the people that was there wanted to play Mario Kart 8. So it was, you know, I think Nintendo, if they had more options, I would put that as the holiday release instead of 2014. But obviously, you know, development cycles, you know, come into effect. So it's just one of those things. I think Mario Kart would really help sell some systems if it came out this holiday. But
sure would. It's a real shame that it's not going to make it, especially with two new consoles launching.
Yeah, Nintendo needs all they can get right now. And I'm still a little disappointed we didn't get at least like some concept art for a new 3D Zelda. I kind of figured they wouldn't show a trailer or anything. I was just kind of hoping they would say something about it, but they didn't mention anything about it. So, you know, Nintendo is, they got a long road. They didn't come out guns blazing like they did with the 3DS, like with, you know, just releasing all these games. It doesn't feel like they're, I don't know, they need to. Somebody needs to light a fire under their asses or something. I don't know.
Did you, like, anecdotally, did you see or talk to the rep and were people, like, playing those demos and then saying, all right, it's time to buy a Wii U? Were, like, Wii U's going out the door?
They did not sell out, but my Best Buy has so many. Like, just, like, the big shelf behind the counters. Mm-hmm. They're just, like, stacked up there.
Like a mountain of Wii U's.
Yeah, pretty much. I did see a lot of them purchase, though. Mostly for families.
Yep.
Most of them were kids getting them. There were a good bit purchased.
Man, getting a console during the summer must be like amazing. Like,
yeah,
who just randomly buys a console for the man? Remember,
that,
like, we used to never get that.
Yeah, it was a Christmas gift.
Yeah.
Yeah. Consoles have generally, unless, you know, when I got to the point where I could start buying them myself, they were always Christmas gifts. The NES, well, that was my dad's. The Super Nintendo was a Christmas gift. The N64, the Dreamcast, the PS2, and then I think the last one I got for Christmas was the GameCube. They were all Christmas gifts. But, you know, it moved a couple consoles. I wouldn't say that, like, you know, people went crazy, but she did say that a couple, you know, went out the door with new Super Mario Brothers, U, and Nintendo Land. And, Scribblenauts is actually kind of a popular one around this area, at least. I know a couple people that play that and really like it, but, you know, it's not a system seller. But it was funny, though, because there was one guy there that was, like, this diehard Microsoft fan, and, like, he was getting – poor guy. I felt bad for him. He was getting ridiculed so bad because you could tell he's a big Xbox fan, and he was trying his hardest to make his point for Xbox One, and he was
– Are you kidding me? Like –
No,
some dude actually was trying to do that.
Yeah, he got to the point where he started insulting people that didn't have internet. He's like, "What kind of morons don't have internet in 2013?"
Oh boy!
And
so
he
lives with his mom still. Is that what you're trying to tell me? Like, because his mom pays for the internet and he can do it or something?
I think you might be onto something.
I want to say he might be. I don't want to stereotype, but he might fit that bill.
No, though the stereotype is an asshole. Which is if it's the same thing, like if I went over there and said, "Oh, you guys, you're playing, you know, PS4 is like 10 times more powerful than the Wii U. What are you idiots doing?" And it doesn't even have like whatever insert.
Stop having fun.
Yeah, like why would you ever make fun of someone? It's like the whenever people get made fun of for owning a Vita or something on NeoGAF, it's like don't worry about it. Like everyone has fun on whatever they play. Their games on. Just chill out.
Well, you know, he was getting kind of mouthy in the Nintendo rep, I guess. You know, she's like I'd say she's like in her late 40s, early 50s, and she's very loyal to that product. And she was getting, I think she had about an earful of him. So, you know, he was like saying why Xbox One was going to be better than Wii U, and he was talking about games.
Who does that, man?
Like, she was like, she goes, "Here's my thing." She's like, "Wii U is all about, you know, getting everybody in the room to play games together." She's like, "The typical Xbox fan is the person that sits in his room alone with no friends and plays online."
The shoot bangs.
And everybody was like, "Ooh!" And then this guy, like, he turned red. I mean, she basically shut him up. That was when it ended. But you know, I'll give the guy credit. He went up against a mob talking about Xbox One because all the talk in line was either Wii U or PlayStation 4, and it's not a good time to be a Microsoft fan.
Well, the interesting part about a lot of this stuff is that.
I was going to say
the interesting part about a lot of this stuff is that I'm ready to buy a Wii U now. Like and it's interesting that I think I was talking with Trey before the show that it's the E3 showing, like the Nintendo Direct, maybe it was just like the lag in the video or something like that or the buffering, but I was super bummed. I'm like, you guys didn't bring anything to the show. Like you, what? There's nothing. Nothing was announced except Donkey Kong, and I was not like I wanted to go into this E3 saying, "All right, gotta go get it with you. It's time to do it." And now I'm even more bummed because Target had them for like $230 a couple weeks ago. They're getting rid of the basics. Yeah,
yeah.
And now I was like, "All right, I'll wait." Man, they got to do like $279. Like $279 for the deluxe makes sense because they have to get at least $100 under the PS4. And I need to wait for that price cut. But right now, if they can get something under $300, I will pick up Wind Waker. Like I said last week, I never played all the way through that. And even though Super Mario 3D World just looks like a bigger Super Mario 3D Land, I guess that will be okay. I kind of get turned off by the four people playing on the screen at once. Like, like you guys said,
it doesn't feel like traditional Mario.
No, it's that complete, just like not playing, not that you're not playing it seriously, but you're not really going for skill and for challenge. That's what you got a lot out of the Galaxy games, is that they got hard. Galaxy 2 got really hard towards the end. And that is something that I wanted out of those games. And still, it's one of those things where, again, the message that Nintendo gives to their fans really puts me off. When Reggie comes and does an interview, like, again, we're talking off air about that Jeff Keighley interview, that he just comes off as an arrogant butthead, and he's basically saying, like, "No, we're right. We're right. We're giving you what you want. No, we're right. What are you talking about? You guys don't want, like, insert new game. You don't want a unified login system. You don't want more stuff on Virtual Console. No, you wanted remakes. No, you wanted, like, and basically the new Super Mario Brothers model like duct taped on to the 3D Land game, which is what I feel like they did. Like they just brought the craziness of the, and not in a good way, from the new Super Mario franchise into 3D Land, into 3D World. And that kind of, like, again, is not the message that I really want to be getting them. Third parties are giving up except Ubisoft, and the announcements didn't give me faith that they are putting the kind of like the effort behind development of these games. They need to staff up. They are resistant.
It's really clear. Yeah, it's really clear that they weren't prepared for the HD game development costs.
Yeah, but it's been 2 years. They should
exactly.
I don't care if they're not. They weren't prepared. They know now, and that means, hey, go down to Kyoto, pick up some more designers, and or do what they did like with Luigi's Mansion and outsource it. And get like some American devs on there. Get some more like second party studios like Retro that you know can make good quality stuff. That will take care of the franchises, and just have like Miyamoto be a producer on it to make sure it doesn't go to hell, and you'll be fine. Like, get some help from people that know what they're doing with HD graphics, because they just don't have. They don't have the manpower to do it, so that's why we're not going to see Zelda. If we see Zelda in 2014, I would be surprised. If we see Zelda, I bet it's going to be like early 2015, because if they didn't have anything to show right now, how is that game going to be out next year?
It's not.
And it's,
or if it was out next year, it would not be what we wanted it to be.
Yeah, it'd be rushed.
No.
And 2015, if we're lucky.
And the stuff that was coming out today is like... I don't know if it was Miyamoto was saying, or was the producer saying, yeah, we want to make it more like, we're thinking about making it more like Skyrim. Like, do you know how many people work on Skyrim, guys? Like 1,000 people worked on that game. You guys have, I forget what it was for Skyward Sword, but Skyward Sword had like 80 or 100 people work on it. Like, I just don't see them getting the message of what they really need to do to be successful, because PS4 comes out in like 5 months and it's going to be $50 more and the games look way better and they're bringing tons of indie titles that will give you that Nintendo feel if you want it. And
that's a good point.
I want Nintendo to do good. It's just like every time they come out and say something, I'm like, you guys don't get it. And it's making me not have confidence in your system. And the 3DS seems to be what I'm going to hold on to until I feel like they're getting their shit together.
You're dropping truth bombs. You are. And, you know, the price part especially. I'm not a price drop guy. I'm not someone who starts yelling that right away. But if there's not a price drop this fall, it would be a huge mistake in the face of a PS4 that only costs $399.
It's not a mountain that they can climb out of, or it's not a pit that they can climb out of. And it's not only that, but they're both going to launch. And when people look at a second console, like, I just spent $400 or $500, maybe I'll get a second console for $350. No way, because when you add in a game, because Nintendo Land, for what it is, whatever. But if you want to add in a game, you're talking $400 plus tax. Guess what? If you don't have Wiimotes anymore, nunchucks, you're going to need those too for a lot of the games. If you want like a second controller, all right, so now we're at $460 plus tax. And that's, again, one thing that for me personally, I have the money. I can go pay for that stuff. That's not a big deal. It's just it's not worth the value. Like, I'm not just going to blow money just to like – let Nintendo think that they're right, because they're not. The Wii U should sell poorly until they have a price cut, until these new games come out. Otherwise, you're just saying, hey, Nintendo, yeah, you're right. We're just going to be suckers and buy your crap because you have a 2D Mario on it and you keep promising stuff that's probably not like... I know, Trey, you're pissed off that Mario Kart 8's not coming out in 2013. Do you really think it's going to come out in spring?
I don't know for sure. I think they hinted it was going to be spring, but
I just don't believe them, man. I just don't believe them anymore.
Yeah, well, especially, you know, in the face of like Pikmin 3 and Wonderful 101 and games like that were supposed to be spring titles this year, that were pushed way back.
Yeah, it's 6 month delay on a game is not nothing. It's not, and this isn't Grand Theft Auto 5. This is Pikmin 3. Like, it's a simpler game. And again, obviously the staffs are different, and this, you know, you have to scale up for that. But I just don't know what we're going to see from them down the road. But until then, we're lucky that at least the 3DS seems to have some good stuff on it. It has some good stuff coming. And like the last thing that they need to do is give us some virtual console stuff. Otherwise, again, they're just kind of leaving money on the table.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. The once a week, you know, releases, it just doesn't make sense. But
I could do a whole podcast on the 3DS. On it's a joke.
Right, right. It is. And they released some random Game Gear games this week.
That's a
start, but still, it's not what it needs to be.
Do you want to play Game Gear games on your 3DS?
I'll be honest. I didn't want to play Game Gear games on the Game Gear when I was a kid.
Oh man, World Series Baseball on that thing was awesome.
Okay.
And Sonic Triple Trouble. Oh man, we gotta have a Sonic Triple Trouble episode.
I do still have a Game Gear, so I have access to it.
Plug that son of a bitch into the wall, and then get that TV turner going. Yeah, exactly. Cool. Although I will say, Mortal Kombat on the Game Gear, I bought that, and it was like birthday money from my grandparents, and I should have just started being a pyro and lit that shit on fire because it was
7 frames per second or something.
Oh, and it was just like there was no noise in it. Like there was no, well, it's basically 8-bit Mortal Kombat. It was maybe it was good for its time. I don't know.
No, I think you were right the first time. It was pretty rough.
Okay, before we go, we have our Back in My Play game recommendations for this week. I'm going to kick it off because it is at the top of the outline, and that is Streets of Rage 2, which is a fantastic brawler on the Sega Genesis. It is also available on just about anything from the Wii U Virtual Console to the it's surprisingly good value, the Sonic Ultimate Genesis collections on the Xbox 360 and the PS3. It is available separately on PSN and on Xbox Live Arcade. It is on everything. You can get it on Amazon.com as a download title for the PC. It is on Steam, and it is probably the best brawler on the Sega Genesis. It has fantastic music. It has, you know, some pretty good combat, and at least for the PS3 version, it looks all right. It's kind of washed out, but it's not too bad. It's not the worst that I've seen. And it is one of those games. It was, I think, the third game that I ever got for my Sega Genesis after I traded in some Super Nintendo stuff and picked it up at my local Funko Land. And I, for some reason, it's one of those games where I remember the exact purchase of it and getting it in like those weird Funko Land sleeves that they made for games that didn't have like cases, and it is a great game. Josh, what do you have for your
Jet Force Gemini, which is an N64 game made by Rare, and this is when Rare was at the top of their game, and it's actually made by the Blast Corps team. I was just doing a little research on it before talking about it again, and it's a third-person shooter. It has some platforming and different elements like that. It's just a really fun game. It has a just great atmosphere, and it would be nice to see a sequel to it. After all these years, I keep thinking that we might get a reboot or something, but I think this is a game that's sort of stuck in that weird limbo space of Microsoft or Nintendo, who has the IP and all that. And I think it's Microsoft, actually, who's in control of the Jet Force Gemini IP and their purchase of Rare. I don't think that Nintendo actually owns this one. So if you want to play it pretty much N64, playing it on the actual cartridge sounds like your only bet, but it's really fun. Also has multiplayer deathmatch mode, which is not a lot of people even really remember that, but it was a blast.
Trey, what do you got? What should I play this week?
I'm going to, because I'm watching WWE Payback right now, I'm going to throw WWF No Mercy.
You ordered the pay-per-view?
No, I'm no. No.
Oh. Oh.
Don't tell me. Yeah. WWF No Mercy on the N64, the best wrestling game of all time.
Uh-oh. I don't know, man.
Hit me. What you got?
I don't know. Okay, so
Fire Pro?
I sold a bunch of my Beanie Babies, and I got WWF Warzone, and that game sucked. But you go and play kind of like the sequel to that.
Attitude?
No. I'm talking about, although the problem with Warzone and Attitude is they looked great, but they played terribly. Like the graphics were way better than what they were doing in the WCW games, like WCW versus the NWO. But the first time I was able to do, maybe it's just because I missed WrestleMania 2000 and No Mercy, and I went to my friend's house and played WWF SmackDown on the PlayStation 1 and blew my, like, the full motion video on the TitanTron and seeing, like, The Rock come down and easily being able to do a people's elbow and not have to do, like, the stupid stuff in Warzone and Attitude where it's, like, basically a finishing move in Mortal Kombat to do, a finisher, which is a joke. I got a lot out of those, but maybe you're right. I got to go and try No Mercy.
It's I don't know. It takes place during the height of the Attitude Era, and like I just like that AKI style of gameplay with the grapples and stuff like that. I think it's my favorite wrestling game. If only it had CM Punk in it, then it would be the best in the world. See what I did there?
I see what you did with the wrestling fans. Like this is,
yeah. I'm watching it right now, man. CM Punk's back.
I'm actually not a big wrestling fan, so sorry to kill the hype train.
No, you're fine.
No, it's good. I think we will have a wrestling. Maybe we'll have to do a wrestling game at some point. Maybe we'll do No Mercy, and you'll have to school us on why it's so great.
That I would really like doing that though because I love wrestling games.
Oh man, I gotta go get another N64. All right, so that's gonna do it for this week's episode. We're juggling around our because we have to acquire some of these games to be able to do them. We are shuffling around the schedule, and for the next four episodes, this is what we got for you. Just so you can mentally prepare and you can play these games up leading up to the show. We have Super Mario World, which will be next week, which is a great game, but there's some very specific stories that we have based on the launch of the Super Nintendo 2 that will come in there as well. After that, we're going to have Shenmue for the Sega Dreamcast, a great game that may have sunk Sega to have to let go of the Dreamcast as a platform. Yu Suzuki, thank you so much for trying. And then after that, we're going to have Journey to Silius, which is going to be the fourth episode. And then after that, we're going to have Chrono Trigger. So we're going to be mixing in some Sega, some Super Nintendo, or some Dreamcast, some Super Nintendo, some more NES stuff. And we're going to do these weekly, so we're going to have a ton of games to go through. If you think we're going to do about 50 games in a year, give or take. And we're just starting with some of the ones to get us going, some of the better known ones. And then we will go to some more lesser known games. Like for some reason, my parents bought me Mick Kids and me and my cousin played the crap out of that. And other lesser known games that we can hit on. So I want to thank you so much for listening to the show this week. The feedback is fantastic. We really appreciate everything you guys have been doing. If you can share it with your friends and your family, the friends that you used to play Super Nintendo with or Sega Genesis, or even maybe if you had a Master System if you were that kid, or TurboGrafx if you were that kid, and or the Jaguar if you're unfortunately that kid, if your parents
no one was that kid. Yeah.
There was three when Jaguar hit $49.99 at my local store. I was so close. I was so close to spending money on that, but I bought Clay Fighter instead. Yeah, I'm an idiot.
I don't know. You can make a case that was a better move.
No, I can't. having Helga shove her ass in my face for 2 minutes was not.
Think of the theme song, man.
Clay Fighter, yeah. And then what I wanted to also mention is that you can now subscribe through iTunes. You can either search for Back in My Play in the iTunes store, or you can go to backinmyplay.com. There's a iTunes logo on there. You can click there, subscribe. And then also, it would be super cool if you could submit a review for the podcast. It would be greatly appreciated. And again, if you are on NeoGAF, there is a thread, an official thread for the podcast. Subscribe to it, though, because there is still some crazy E3 stuff going on. Subscribe to it, and again, give us your feedback on there. If we have an episode that you're particularly, or a game that you're particularly enthusiastic about, we might be doing some segments where we get your take on it as well. I'll call you up and get your take on the game just to get some other perspectives. But other than that, we're out. This ended up being a lot longer than I thought it would be, and my voice is barely holding on. So again, Trey, Josh, thanks for spending the time, and thank you all out there for listening. We'll catch you next time.